Chill, keeping you company during the coronavirus.
Hi, this is Nathaniel Metcalf. You can catch me on FUBAR Radio's Nick and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on Fridays at midday. I want you all guys to not leave the house, much like I'm not doing. You're listening to Stay Home and Chill on FUBAR Radio, keeping you company through the coronavirus.
Callum McSwiggan on FUBAR Radio.
So now I am joined by LGBT plus icon and living legend, Armistead Maupin. I hear you're really excited about being on FUBAR because you're allowed to swear and,
well,
and say whatever you like.
I don't have to worry about it. I usually swear in all sorts of places and they look horrified. But I think we must use all words in the language.
Absolutely.
When we want to tell a story.
So let's talk a little bit about Tales of the City. Now, this is a series that so many people have recommended to me. I must confess, I've not actually read it yet, but one of my very best friends gave me a copy for my birthday, so I'm very
excited
to tear into it. Yeah, that's a start.
It's important that the young be indoctrinated, and I'm happy that someone's working it on you.
I feel like, as well, Tales of the City is something that is, you know, well-loved by young generations and the older generations. You know, it's something that spans absolutely everybody, and it was written across several decades as well.
It's been going on for 43 years now. And I've always tried to update it with younger characters. Yeah. We had to bring in some writers this time around because I can't keep up with everything. But we have a really rich show that speaks to everyone's experience. There's a lot of intergenerational stuff in Tales of the City that's dear to my heart, because when I was first coming out 40 years ago, I had people, even older gay people, Christopher Isherwood, the writer who created the Berlin stories and therefore Cabaret, who invented Liza Minnelli, for heaven's sake, was all constantly throwing parties where there were all ages of queers. And we got to tell our stories to each other. And it sort of validated everything. You could see where they had been and where you were going. But we have moments in Tales where generations share their experience, a particularly powerful one between Michael Tolliver and his 30 years younger lover, husband. Now, they're not married yet. I want them to be married.
Yeah.
Where they talk about the fact that Michael doesn't share his experiences with AIDS. He was so traumatized by this, as many of us were at that time when your friends were all dropping dead. It was like a horror show.
Yeah.
And you bury it. You don't talk about it. And it becomes a moment where they're sharing to the degree that they can become closer as two men.
I feel like the LGBT plus community in particular is this place where we do have this kind of crossing generations that you don't see anywhere else. You know, you can walk into a gay bar even now and there'll be an 18-year-old and an 80-year-old.
That's the joy of it.
Stories.
That's the joy of it. I always say it's like being in the Navy. You can come to a strange town, but you recognize the uniform and there's fellowship.
Yeah, absolutely.
Instant fellowship. And we need to not let go of that. Real easy to do when you've got the internet and you can find exactly what you wanted online.
Yeah, absolutely.
I said the other day, probably in my place, I shouldn't have said it, that I'm not going to be one of those old queens that complains about you young people today with your grinder. You got it so easy. In my day, we had to walk 20 miles through the snow just to suck a cock.
Wow. But
it's true.
You know, it is true.
Well, it's sort of true.
But, you know, you can use Grindr today. Everyone can use it.
As a matter of fact, it wasn't Grindr, but I met my husband on a website called Daddy Hunt.
Oh, wow.
And no. I didn't meet him on the website. I was walking down the street and saw him. Beautiful man that he still is today, after 15 years, and recognized him from Daddy Hunt.
Oh, wow. Now that is something.
And I knew he liked men over 45.
Yeah.
And as I said at the time, I was overqualified for that position. That grew out of the use of the internet.
I think that really is modern day romance, isn't it?
It really is. Everybody.
Quite touching.
Everybody straight and gay meets their true love online eventually, after some serious disasters.
Joey Page on FUBAR Radio.
I'm now very excited to be in the hallowed dressing room of the wonderful, amazing Mr. Gary Newman. How you doing?
I'm doing really well, thank you. I'm not sure about hallowed, though.
Well, you've got the nicest sofa out of all the dressing rooms. You've got the best chairs. So
brilliant.
There you go. Don't know if that was on your rider. comfy little leather sofa.
No. Oh God, no, nothing like that. No.
You're always like pushing the edge of it, and like it's a real credit to you that you've got your sound, but you're always like making it sound different, but you still know it's one of your records. Do you know what I mean?
I think that the voice is sort of quite recognisable.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a double-edged sword, really, because it's not a particularly good one, but it has a sound. So as soon as you can do what you like with the music, I think, and as soon as I start singing, then it will sound like me.
Yeah, yeah.
Which isn't necessarily a good thing, but it does give you a sound, you know. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people search their entire careers to find a sound that's,
of course,
that's theirs,
yeah, yeah,
an identity that's theirs. So I'm not grumbling, wish I had a better voice, that's all.
Do you feel like, I don't want to make it sound old, but like legacy wise do you feel like sometimes you don't necessarily get the respect that I would say you deserve, in terms of like, you see people recently, David Bowie's last couple of records and Paul Weller being like quite good at changing up their sound and pushing the boundaries, and I feel like you do exactly the same and you don't get quite as much credit for that.
I don't know, actually. I was thinking that I do pretty well in terms of credit. I got an Ivor Novello Award in May for innovation in songwriting. I got one last year from Q, I think, for, again, innovation or influence, I think it was. There's a massive amount of people who do covers of my stuff or sample my stuff and say loads of really, really cool things. So I felt for a long time that I get a really generous amount of credit for what I've done. It's not as if I'm out there looking at every interview and seeing if anyone mentions my name, because I don't really care too much about that side of it at all. Again, I've got no issues with that at all. Totally comfortable with the recognition, as it
were. Well, long may it continue. Like, I'm a real big fan. One thing, if there's a sudden downturn, I've got a second line of work for you if you're interested in this.
Really?
Right?
Yeah.
Come up with a brainchild. And it's, I've had to write it down because I won't remember. Basically, if you fancy ever going into sort of like doing weddings, a super group with you, Gary Oldman, one of the Borrowers, and Duncan from Blue. Something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue. How do you feel about that?
Oh, yeah.
We'll do that.
Oh, it's a brilliant idea.
There we go.
That's why you're where you are.
Yeah, exactly why I'm only where I am.
Ian Boldsworth on Three Bar Radio.
Hello, welcome to the show.
We have Tiny Temper going to be joining us on the Teffalone. Hiya, Tiny, this is Ian here. I'm not particularly well up on rap, but I've always been a fan. And I watched Straight Out Compton, the movie.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest with you, it'd been a while since I'd sort of engaged with hip-hop or anything like that. For a while.
Yeah.
In my teens was when DMC and Beastie Boys as well were sort of, you know, with the big well-known things in the UK. Mm-hmm. You know, then followed by Public Enemy and Andrew Ray and all that sort of thing. So, in terms of what you're aware of at that point, I still feel like in my formative years it was something that was quite important to me. But when I watched Straight Outta Compton the other week, I said to you, Nat, about me feeling like I didn't want to feel like I was appropriating something else. It felt like it wasn't for me, so I had no right to like it.
I mean my engineer's from Ireland, and I've known him since I was 14. I'm 28 now. Whenever we get into heated discussions, he always says that there is sometimes a risk, him for looking at it from an Irish perspective, that some things can be made to feel like it's not for everyone. I mean, I get that. I definitely get that. I think, like I said, a lot of rap comes from a place of struggle, and I feel everybody has different struggles in different ways. But obviously, even if you look at like the way we do things on radio as people from Britain, everything is quite sartorial, everything is quite funny.
Yeah.
You know, we're always trying to kind of like take the mick out of each other in a clever way. That is almost like the style of the radio, right? That is a style that has been designed by somebody, and people have followed and followed and followed that format.
Yeah.
And I feel that when cultural appropriation comes into play, is when a culture is not acknowledged. Like, for example, that's like me just taking, I guess, something from Indian culture or Asian culture, but not acknowledging that it's from there, and then taking the mick out of it. That's when I think people can get angry. But in terms of you like liking something, in the same way I like Dolly Parton, I have no idea what country Western music, where it came from.
Yeah, yeah.
I have no idea about her personal life or her background, but she has a good voice and she sang good songs, and it doesn't matter whether she's from Middle America or whether she's from Africa or whatever, I still like her. And I feel like that's what music is about. You know, music is for the soul, you know, not necessarily for the person. However, I do think, yes, you know, in this way that we do talk about music and talk about artists and do parodies and do skits and do gimmick kind of things in British culture, I definitely do feel like people could misinterpret that for cultural appropriation, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess Honey G, I didn't have a problem with Honey G because I thought it was funny, but I guess a lot of people I knew had a problem with the fact that she was being taken as a serious rapper, even though it was quite clear that it was like a side hobby and she had like a regular job, but then she would put on an outfit and then change her accent and make a few hand gestures, and then everyone would say, oh, she's transformed into this person. And then the way that the narrative was written, it's like she would do like a crib in her house, but then she'd say, oh, look at my kettle, and it'd be an actual kettle. Or,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, that for me is more of a form of cultural appropriation.
I think those programmes, though, generally speaking, do this. But I think Britain's Got Talent does the same thing, where I think it will take a genre of performance or a style of performance, or be it a comedian, be it a singer, be it a rapper, whatever it is. I think in order to work on those programmes, it's always going to be something very generic and very gimmicky. Or I've seen comics on Britain's Got Talent this year, both of whom, the two that I've seen, both of whom I know as club comics who are fantastic, don't even want to look at what they did on Britain's Got Talent, because I know it won't be representative of what they actually do in their actual careers. So I guess that we can't take any performances having any credibility, for want of a better word, on a programme like that, because it will always be what they want you to do.
Some of those artists are the biggest selling artists in the world.
Absolutely.
I think in one respect you're right, but then in one respect you're kind of wrong as well, because the world has taken loads of those artists.
Yeah.
And it's reflected in their sales.
When I do gigs after people have got big momentarily from things like that, I mean, I've long laid the blame for the behaviour of audiences at Simon Cowell's door over the last 10 years. I really have, in terms of how they've manipulated how audiences look at a performer, no matter what they're doing. So I would certainly agree that it has gone through to the audiences. It has gone through to people where they...
And it is taken seriously.
Yeah. But is it serious, or is it just that it's dumbed it down?
I don't know, man. I think everyone's got a different part to play in the sense of art, I guess. You own music, or the music industry, i.e. I'm the artist, you know, you guys are doing the interview, someone is putting together that show, and like you said, some artists, some which are incredibly, who are incredibly genuine, are going on there for exposure on a bigger platform, and some people see it as an opportunity to kind of get 15 minutes, and everybody's entitled to do what they want to do. But I mean, going back to what you were saying just about cultural appropriation, I think cultural appropriation comes from, and I'm very much British as well, but it's almost like our or Western culture's interpretation of other cultures and other art form within other cultures is where the issue of cultural appropriation comes from.
Okay.
And I think that, say that you watched Straight Outta Compton and it made you feel like it wasn't for you, I could understand why I say that, but I was almost just trying to kind of correct you and say that it is for you, it's for everyone, it's for anyone who can relate to it. The taboo or the stigma comes from when, I guess, people from a particular culture feel like their culture is being misrepresented or is being almost taken the mick out of in the very kind of like natural, deep-rooted way that we do in British media or radio. But if it's someone's culture, if it's someone's religion, that's when people might feel sensitive about it.
Yeah.
Access all areas on FUBAR Radio.
We've got another hot guest in the studio.
Sophie Herman, the German from Made in Chelsea.
Hello.
Hi. Looking guys. Amazing.
Thank you.
I just
so
want
do you.
Everything you're wearing.
Yeah, I know.
She looks good.
You guys, you've just been talking for 2 minutes and all you've done is talk fashion. I've just been sat here like a lemon.
But Sophie, lovely to see you here at FUBAR. What a show, Made in Chelsea. How did it all come about, Sophie? Tell us from the beginning.
From the beginning, oh my God, we will have to scroll back to 2013.
Wow.
When I used to be friends with Victoria Baker Harbour. She at the time wanted a female companion. Mark Francis only oozes that much.
Oh, I love him.
And yeah, so we were friends. So I thought, why not? I had a fashion brand at the time, Sophie Herman London, and I thought it would be a great platform to promote that. And now here I am, 6 years later, without the brand and more Made in Chelsea. Oh, here he is, Miles. That's not what
Perfect
I
was.
Miles
timing.
Enters the room.
Hi, Schweini.
Miles.
Always late.
Schwein.
Hey, I love someone who makes an entrance.
I'm so sorry, I'm late.
And someone got a new haircut, if that's why you're late.
I did get a haircut.
Did you get a haircut? Well, you're looking good.
Yeah, thank you.
How are you, Miles? You good?
Very well, very well. Very happy to be here. How are you guys?
sharp as hell, isn't he? Look at this guy. Tattoos on his arms. Sexy son of a gun.
The tattoos. I thought this was a pig, actually, and it's a lion.
It annoys me because everyone thinks this looks like a washing machine, a washer dryer.
That's true. It's a washer dryer and a schwein. Yeah. Well done.
If you can't see it on the camera, this huge, great big tumble dryer and washing machine combo on his forearm.
So Miles,
he's very efficient at his washing. That's what we've learned so far.
Listen, he's late,
that's
but he looks good.
That's what I'm looking for in a guy. Domesticated.
Domesticated. Fine.
So Miles, how did you get into the show?
So James obviously was on the show beforehand, and we knew each other from South France. And I guess we got back in touch, and he was like, "Oh, I'm doing the show. Like, it'd be brilliant if you wanted to come on over with me." And I said, "Yeah, why not?"
And since then, you've been dubbed the ladies' man of the show. Yeah. So are we saying that you're officially not a one girl at a time type of guy? Cat's got his tongue.
No, I think I love. Am I serious? Serial data? No, I don't like to settle down straight away. So
you're
23.
Oh goodness, at 23.
But you were caught talking to James Taylor, saying that you do like to play the field a bit and have a bit of fun. Correct?
Yeah. If you're not putting a label or anything, and you're direct with the person you're with, or that you're maybe fooling around with, or you're dating, I think, you know, you're allowed to do what you want.
Now, a certain cast member has made headlines recently, okay?
Mm-hmm.
About stripping down to her lingerie for Miles as she attempts her with chocolate fondant.
I saw this.
Tell us about this.
I saw
lady, this cast member. Come on, Miles, come clean on Fuba.
Okay, so the lady is my ex, Maeva.
Great name.
Yes. Yeah, French, Italian, very hot blood. Lovely, lovely, lovely girl. Yeah, she caught me by surprise. When that happened, I genuinely did not know what to do or how to react. She said, "Yeah, I'm gonna get more Prosecco," and then said to me, "Close your eyes." I said, "Okay." I was like, okay, no,
yeah,
surely
no, come
not.
Out of the back of your
does
brain. You must have been like,
this is gonna
be good, but there's a cameraman in the room.
Exactly.
So I don't really know how far she's gonna go with this.
That is exactly that. I was so shocked because in the back of my mind, I was like, yeah, she might, you know, undress whatever. But then I was like, no, there's cameras, like, she will never do it. And she can't undress. And I almost nearly looked into the camera. I was like, what? I really didn't expect it. But
there weren't moments like that on The Bachelor, but I can definitely tell you, when you're sort of stuck and lost for words and there's people in the room, you really don't know where to look.
Oh, God.
And then obviously there was only one thing that you probably could look at.
Yes, so, very true.
My God, so that must have blown your mind a bit.
I mean, I'm not like, it was a fun night.
But you are renowned for hooking up with old girlfriends, correct? Or is that not correct?
They always end up coming back into my life.
Do you bring that on yourself? Or do they just... just straight away. I was trying to get him out of it there. Yeah. Gave him the option
straight away.
Have you
had a few drinks? You think, oh, you know what? I'm going to text him.
Are you going to text him, Miles?
It takes two champagne and he's a whore. Sorry.
I hate to admit it, but
you know me.
I know. We've all gotten that booty call.
Sophie, have you had that booty call from Sam Thompson?
Me?
Yeah, is he?
It's still the wrong Sophie, darling.
Oh, wrong Sophie.
Never.
Come on, no.
No.
But I love the fact that the show isn't staged, because many people think that it is all kind of set up, the show, and the dramas and the rows and the love... interest.
I think also it's like, I would find it hard to act sad. I mean, you know, when you see a lot on the show where you see people, you know, crying and all getting really irate and all of that. I mean, I just studied a bit of acting when I was in school, but I mean, I'm not that much of a good actor
to get
tears down my face. Like, it's hard.
I don't think anyone in the show is a great actor.
No.
Like, apart from Ollie Locke, he was amazing. Like, otherwise,
I
no
love
one
Ollie.
Really, yeah.
Ollie's amazing.
But I think because, you know, we get put into situations where we're all so tight-knitted together, then things are obviously, like, bound to explode way quicker than they would normally do.
I mean, are you conscious that the cameras are there, though? I mean, you know, but then are you not being your real self? Are you conscious of what you're going to say
forget.
Next?
Yeah.
I mean, in the beginning, I have to say, like, when I joined the show, the first, like, 1.5 years, I was, like, a bit weird and freaked out. And now, since I returned in 2016, I'm much more myself. You just get used to it, but it takes some time.
Because I always think that you must be so self-conscious if the cameras are right in your face, or you're having a bit of a love scene, or there's something quite intimate you're talking about, and you've got a cameraman. And
when you're on a scene or you're talking, you know, you can be talking sometimes for like hours and hours. You forget that there are like three main big cameras staring at you and recording everything, because you're just talking, you're having normal chat. In the beginning, you know, when it's set up a little bit, you're like, okay, you're very aware of it. But then once you get into conversation with people, then it kind of
you forget.
Yeah,
I mean, it must be the same on Bachelor.
If you work with the crew on a daily basis as well, then, you know, they're kind of like friends and family as well, so you're much more
relaxed.
Much more relaxed, you know, opening up about stuff in front of them.
So what can we expect from the next... of the series?
I think you'll see a lot of emotions. I think there's few friendships that break. It's an exciting series, I must admit. I think there's a lot of drama. There's, you know, the new people do bring it as well. I think the new cast members have really got their own, and you know, there's some new sassy characters that will come in to play as well. So it's going to be really fun and exciting.
Talk to me about the new cast. Are they deeply involved and invested as you guys are?
I don't know. I would have to speak to them.
Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville on FUBAR Radio.
We've got Royce the 5'9" on the line. How's it going, sir?
Hello, mate.
Yes, I am here.
Well, you are here. You are indeed here. Yeah, very well, thank you. You are over here as part of Prime, one of your many kind of projects. I think 2-3 years ago now?
That was the Prime Tour.
Yeah,
exactly.
The kind of collaboration with DJ Premier, is that as long a time in the making as we think? Because obviously Boom came out in what, like 2002?
Spent a lot of years just kind of building a relationship.
Yeah.
We did like a lot of work with each other. He worked on various projects of mine. He pretty much did something on every project that I released.
Yeah, of course.
He executive produced one album. He did like a beat or two on each album. By the time we had done like a lot of work together on albums, there was an idea that came to the table for Slaughterhouse to pick one producer that was really good at chopping samples and then find one music source to pull from. When I took the idea to the guys, they weren't really that into the idea, so I felt like it was too good of an idea for me to just kind of wait. So I took it to Premier to see how he felt about it. And luckily, you know, I caught him at the right time when he was open to the idea. You know, so we went in and did it, and the rest is history.
Absolutely. Wow. We're all huge fans, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I definitely appreciate that. That's a plus.
So the partnership with J. Cole on Bob Lo Boat, which is the current single.
Yeah, I was going to give you a little background on how the J. Cole feature happened.
That's like exactly what I was going to ask. You read my mind.
We were talking about getting together and doing some music for like a long time. We sent a couple ideas back and forth to each other, and it was just kind of like, nah, this isn't quite it. You know, this is good, but this isn't quite it, because we got like a mutual respect for one another. And we knew that whatever the first thing that we did with each other, we wanted it to be special. You know, we wanted to give the people something special. So, he came to Detroit on his tour. He came to my studio. Something about the creative process, man, when you're sitting in a room with the person, it's way easier to connect when you got like like-minded personality. Cole is like really cool. He's like a really cool, down-to-earth, smart guy. You know what I mean? Like, kind of like myself, you know? So we sat in the room with each other, man, and everything just fell into place. You know what I mean? Like, I pulled up the beat. I told him the idea. Once we got in the room with each other, that's when everything kind of fell into place. You know what I mean? Because our personalities just matched and everything just came together real organic.
Yo, yeah, right. So J. Cole's obviously like, he's a big, one of my favorite artists at the moment in terms of current artists. He's got a lot of substance here. A lot of people have got a lot of opinions on the state of rap in America right now. Like, obviously, J. Cole's an artist that's got substance. Like, what's your opinion on some of, like, the trap rappers and these, like, people call it mumble rap and this, that,
rappers
and the other? Like, this is what I'm saying. Even over here, split. Because either I'm a big fan of old school hip hop with substance, and I like J. Cole, I like Badass, I like Action Bronson, guys that have got a lot of content and substance. But at the same time, I've got a guilty pleasure.
I like
the ignorant shit as well. I'm not going to lie. Like, it vibes is me, innit? Like, what's your opinion on the state of rap right now?
Really like a lot of the new stuff. I don't like all of it. But I think one thing that's real cool about the climate, man, is like nobody really has to listen to anything that they don't want to listen to.
True,
that they don't
straight.
Like. And nothing's really being forced on you anymore. Mm-hmm. Everything is on demand. You straight, know what I mean?
Man.
So I just kind of live within the realm of what I like. You know, I just kind of live my life based off of what I choose to see, what I choose to listen to. So a lot of the stuff that I don't like, because there's never really been an era in music that there was something where I liked everything. Like, I've always had something that I disliked. You know, so it's the same with this era. I don't think the bad music of this era is any different from the bad music from any other era.
I agree with
that. You know, so the difference to now is I just don't pay it any attention. If I don't like it, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Sick.
you are definitely revered as an MC's MC. You know, you're a real, real lyricist. Would there ever be a kind of possibility, do you think, of doing a tune with one of these very current kind of mumble rappers?
You know what? I don't really think about it that much, but I'm certainly open to anything creative.
I'm certainly up for the challenge. You know, like if it's somebody that I feel is talented. But yeah. The main thing with that, man, is sometimes you can listen to somebody. They may not be a lyricist, but you can hear where they're talented.
Yeah,
you can hear where they're good at what they do.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Royce, just a quick one. What do you think on Kanye's poop that he scooped verse?
Bro, I mean, I
like it.
Man, you listen, man. It's getting a little bit ridiculous, man.
It is now, man. I was genuinely trying to avoid the K word all show.
Bro.
He's Voldemort.
I think Hove is the only one who can fix this, man.
It all started when Hove stopped talking to him as well. Yeah. He just spiraled out of control, man.
He does need help, though. I took the piss on Twitter earlier and I felt bad.
One minute we're told he has got a mental illness, but then we're told by so-called professionals that that it's harmful saying he's got a mental illness. So that's why I don't talk about it anymore, because I just don't know what the fuck's going on, and I kind of stopped caring, to be fair.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie to you. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you, sir.
Thank you so much for all your continued support. Thank you guys, for supporting me. Thank you for having me on the show.
Peace and
love, bro.
Nice job.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
We're joined in the studio now by John Niven, who is an author and a screenwriter.
And me and Nick come from a sort of stand-up background. So would you...
Well, I'm a stand-up.
Stand-up background.
I'm having a year off. And you're a stand-up.
Yeah, yeah.
Stand-up
Nick
background.
Nick used to be a stand-up.
I used to be a stand-up. Fucking right.
But do you have, when you're doing like a book reading, do you have a certain section? Is there a bit of it where you think about that as a bit of performance as well, right?
A little bit. There's a chunk from my Kill Your Friends, the novel that this one's a sequel to. There's quite a long chunk in that book about how young indie bands generally get treated when they get signed to major labels,
right.
And I could do that whole 3-page bit verbatim after
a while. Oh,
wow. So you'd find a young, you'd say to the audience, MD here who's in a band, you get some 19-year-old kid to put his hand up, and you'd do the whole bit sort of to him in the style of the character. Unlike you guys, most novelists aren't sort of natural stand-ups. It's kind
right.
of, being a writer, you spend a lot of your time alone, and then to have to go out and promote it and get up on a stage in front of people, it's not the natural habitat for a lot of us, which is why you'll use like guest interviewers. It helps, but I guess I've been doing this 10 years now. For instance, I've got 2 or 3 chunks now that I know I can do.
Yeah, yeah.
So I remember when I did Caitlin Moran early on in her published writing career, I might have asked her 10 questions over an hour. Then I did it a few years later when she'd been touring a lot, and I might have asked her 2 questions and she could go for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Stephen King famously said that writing a novel is like crossing the Atlantic in a bathtub. It's a long, quite lonely hall. It's just you for a very long time.
Yeah,
in the room.
Yeah.
So when the book comes out and you get to, come meet guys like you and do things like this and all that, it's the funner aspect
of
it.
Yeah.
But then again, after a couple of weeks of this, you think, oh, God, I just want to get back to my study and write the next book.
I don't think it's that far away from stand-up.
No, I don't. Especially doing that kind of performancing. And I guess you've got all those book festivals now, and you've got Hay on Wye and all that kind of stuff. And like places like Latitude have literature tent.
Latitude's a good one to do. I've done all these that you're talking about. It's getting better in this country. But I think for a while, it was a bit fusty, and as I say, you do it in the afternoon in a bookshop, and they wouldn't charge for it. They just, come along.
Yeah.
I think when someone's free with that, it kind of gets devalued.
Yes, yes.
But then I'm lucky enough, I do quite well in Germany, me and David Hasselhoff. But you go there and they treat it as to go and see an English author, they treat it as an evening's entertainment, and
yes,
they pay like 15-20 euro ticket, and the bigger German cities I can draw get 200-300 people in the bigger towns, so you notice that it's been like that in Germany for a while, so hopefully it's starting to improve a wee bit here and there, I think.
And here's a thing, it's vulgar to talk about, but when you've got people paying for tickets, where's that money going? That feels like it's very much part of the publishing industry. Yeah. Also feels like, where's all that going?
Well, the one they do now is that you buy, and I had some readers sort of complaining a wee bit on Twitter because the tickets were quite expensive for the tour, like 20 quid. But that includes the hardback, which is
£16.99.
They're only paying a few quid to actually hear my drivel. The bulk of the ticket price is going for the book.
Selling the book, which is the point of the book tour.
Exactly.
I remember about 20 years ago now, just going into a Waterstones to have a look around, and it was obviously at a time that Mad Frankie Fraser, the gangster, was doing a signing in Waterstones, but it was obviously like poorly publicised or something. So he'd be walking around, but there'd just be a table in the middle of Waterstones that Mad Frankie Fraser, on his own, looking furious, and like he was about to like tear someone's throat out, just sat by himself tapping his pen on the table. That you almost go in, and you felt a threat that I feel like I've got to buy his book. Okay, I don't really want to, but he sat there on. It was just sort of this surreal thing of seeing this guy that you've seen on documentaries like. So I took him out and I got his throat, kind of thing. It's that, and he going, it just felt so weird that he'd be in that environment as well. Yeah, I'm just sat in a bookshop and no one's coming to get Mad Frankie Fraser's autograph.
You'd have thought Mad Frankie could have intimidated people into buying his book. He'd be doing
it almost worked.
There was the Steve Coogan did the book tour for Nomad. He did the Alan Partridge book Nomad, and as a publicity stunt outside, I think it was either going to be London, Manchester or Norwich, but outside the Waterstones, in one of those places, he parked the cock-pissed Partridge car out the front without permission, and then it just got loads of parking fines all day, because he was just like, he can pay it. And he was just like, this thing, everyone was taking photos of it saying he's there in Waterstones.
That's all the publicity you need, isn't it?
It's amazing. Just parked it illegally out there. The front, and it had cockpiss Partridge but with the amendments on it, and yeah, I just thought that is absolutely fucking incredible. I thought,
yeah, I've got to get a car like that. Walk that into the plot of the next book.
Dan Clark on Fubar Radio.
With me in the studio is Mr. Rhys Shearsmith. So you, of course, you are an acclaimed actor of screen and television and stage.
Yes,
you are one half of the team behind Psychoville and Inside Number 9, and one quarter, is that technique?
That's correct, I guess.
Of the hugely popular League of Gentlemen, which began, as we just mentioned, off air 17 years ago.
Yeah, it was nearly 20 years ago. It's quite horrific.
It felt like you guys knew exactly what it was you were doing from almost the offset. Is that a fair thing to say?
Well, it just evolved in the way that we kept doing it on stage and trying out new characters. And then if something seemed to hit or we thought it had legs, we would pursue it almost like a sketch. The character would return and you were sort of rewarded if you came back with a sort of evolution of that character. It was sort of the TV series in embryo, really, doing it on stage.
I seem to remember people saying, oh, you've got to go back each week because they continue the story every Monday, was it? And every Monday or Wednesday
all
or something?
All these Mondays, in our cafe. Because we needed the theatricality of sitting down and watching it like a bit of theatre. You know, we were very rigorous with the staging of it, because we'd seen sketch shows that were just tinkly piano between each sketch, and we just thought that slightly lets it down. If it felt like a big, complete thing, we just tried to be a bit more, you know, it wasn't rocket science, but we just wanted it to be completely slick, even in the moving of the chairs. They made people sit up because it was a little bit more thought about.
Yeah.
I mean, not massively, but it just helped with the seamlessness of one thing into the next.
Were you directed?
No, we sort of did it ourselves.
Did it yourselves?
Yeah, we did it ourselves.
And how come you always did credit Jeremy as being the fourth member rather than what people, writers who are not performers, normally get treated quite badly and sort of forgotten about? But you were always mentioned as a four-piece, but you see the photo and you go, who's this mystery fourth guy?
Yeah, Jeremy was always completely part of it, and it felt odd to exclude him from any part of the process.
Yeah.
He was just, and he just didn't want to act, and yet he was absolutely part of the voice of what we sort of were doing. So,
well, I thought it was very generous of you.
Well, that's
today.
Very kind. It never occurred to us that we were being kind.
Just thought you had to do it.
Yeah.
Comedy-wise, how do you feel about the state of comedy?
I hate comedy. No interest.
Isn't it? I detect an element of truth there.
Well, I don't like watching it because I get riled at anyone else doing it. I mean, I shouldn't, because I feel, like you say, we don't really do the same thing as anybody else. I always felt like League was in its own little cul-de-sac.
Mm-hmm.
They once tried to do, you remember that thing, Comedy Connections, that used to be on?
Yeah.
They were going to do one on League of Gentlemen, and they started it, and they couldn't find any connections.
Callum McSwiggan. On FUBAR Radio.
Today I am unbelievably excited. I've got an excitable bundle of joy in the studio with me today. It's the incredible Sophie Anderson.
Oh my goodness. Hey, babes. Hi, guys and girlies.
So, Sophie, you have a legacy of being a bit of a cock destroyer.
Oh, babe.
Now,
I love that cock.
I know
love
you
that
do.
Dick, babe.
I do as well. For any of our listeners who don't understand, like, why you're a cock destroyer and where that came from, I mean, for a start, they've been living under a rock.
But, hello!
But do you want to tell us how you became a cock destroyer and how you earned that title?
So, should we go back a bit,
Let's go back a bit. Let's rewind.
Let's go right back. So I think I've always been a bit of a cock destroyer, babe. You know, even from being, like, back at school, I was like... You know, I've always been really, really sexual. You know, yeah. I have that, like, fire in me that's, like, burning and burning. But being honest with you, it's only been, like, a couple of years ago when I first came out then doing porn, I was like, I love this. Yeah. I'm on film and I love being with, like, people who love it.
Yeah.
Well, so it's first of all, it's, like, the porn community. And now it's, like, the whole gay community. And it's, like, it's behind me and I love them all. It's just, like, amazing.
It really is amazing. And I think you and Rebecca Moore, who is your fellow cock destroyer.
My baby. Yeah, that's it.
I think it's amazing how the two of you, and I mean, I think this is something that's quite difficult to do, is to get gay men interested in female porn stars.
Definitely.
But you have, you know, you've created this kind of, people are obsessed with you. The two of you have become gay icons. All of my gay friends love you. They adore you. They worship the ground you walk upon.
Oh my God, that's so amazing. Yeah. Do you know what though? I think it's because that, you know, it's cock destroying for me is living for cock. You know, so every time, like, I did something last week, dick mode, and I was like,
the robot,
right,
I saw it.
Babe, I am robot. I'm even do robotic moves now. Like, I am in dick mode, babe. Don't worry, babe, so I won't jump on you just yet. No, literally, and it was, you know, it isn't just for performance. It's like, I love dick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely love it.
You identify as bisexual yourself. So, you know, you talk about the LGBT plus community, but you are part of it. You know, you're there with us.
Oh my God, I so am. And then this is what I mean, where I found something that is my baby. You're all my babies, you know. Aww. And I absolutely love it. I finally found myself, and that's what it makes you smile, because I've been accepted.
Oh, that's so lovely.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, and all I want to do now is kind of give back.
Yeah,
that's what I really do. And I have young guys and girls who do message me and DM me on Twitter, and they're like, I'm really struggling, you know, I can't come out to my parents, and I mean, I was very lucky. My dad was like, you do whatever you want to do, you know, and he's like, you be who you want to be, whether you're with a man, a woman, or, you know, a transsexual. He's great.
Yeah.
But not everyone has that support.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we just need someone to come in and grab you and go, it's going to be all right.
Yeah.
It really is. And there are lots and lots of support out there. Like, I know there's all different support groups and everything. I really want to be a part of that.
Yeah.
I really do. In another way, I don't know how these big companies would feel about kind of a porn star escort, like, coming in. So that's the only thing, like, charities, because I know.
But I think it depends on the charity and the organisation. I think there are so many organisations and things that would welcome you, because, you know, you are doing a positive thing.
Oh my
There's
God,
nothing
yeah.
negative to
oh,
what
no.
you're doing.
No, of course not. And I do think, like, helping people, that is just like, oh my God, so amazing.
Yeah. It's really, really important.
Yeah, I think so too. Yes, it's just such an amazing, and this whole cock destroyers has done this, you know, and even young guys and girls are like, wow. Wow. And young girls are going, I had a picture today, brilliant. She had, like, a key ring, and she had, it was like a little sperm in her mouth.
Oh, that's amazing.
Oh my God, that is, like, so super cool. But how wicked that young girls can even feel they can put pictures on Twitter like that. I mean,
open up about their sexuality. Oh,
and young women even feeling like that, because I know that I couldn't, and I would never have done that. But for me, and I retweet the picture, I'm like, yes babes, I'm with you, you know, all the way. And I think that's such an important thing.
I do think it's really important, and I think it's something that perhaps people don't quite give you credit for, is the fact that you are putting yourself out there so openly and so honestly.
Yeah.
You are telling other people that, you know what, it's fine to seize hold of your sexuality, whether that's, you know, just coming out as gay or bisexual, or whether that's saying, you know what, I feel hypersexuality, I want to explore that, I want to go to a sex party, I want to do this,
it's
I want to do this.
You're
normalising that, and it's so needed in this kind of, like, very stuffy, uptight society that we have.
I agree. And now, the thing is, I think it's really important is to have parents to take control, have that communication with their children. And, you know, if my son, if he watched something online, I'd want him to come to me and go, Mum, right, I saw this. I don't know what it is. Even the extreme stuff, you know, I know he would come to me.
That's amazing.
Because we have that relationship. And I think, you know, people just need to be more open about it, and parents, and being able to talk about it, and in schools and everything. Do you know, I heard yesterday as well that they didn't start until 2003 to start talking about kind of homosexual relationships.
Yes, it was forbidden in school, in fact. You weren't allowed. There was Section 28 legally prevented you from talking about it with students.
I can't believe that.
Yeah, it's outrageous.
Exactly. And I think all we need to do, like I said, is get that communication with our kids and make sex a real positive thing.
Absolutely. And that is why you're here today, Sophie.
Yeah,
we're thrilled to have you here today.
Harriet Rose on FUBAR Radio.
Welcome to FUBAR Radio. Myself and Michael Payne are here with the king of R&B, Craig David. How's it going?
So good. How are you?
I'm so good that I'm around you. This is so exciting.
It is an enlightening experience.
Right in the building.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It feels good, isn't it? I feel like you are pretty much at the spearhead of this cyclical sort of movement that's going on. We are looking back to two-step garage and grime and all the pirate radio station genres that we used to love. There's so much scope for them to be spread now. So it's really, really doing all the good artists a favour, including yourself. How did it feel growing up in Southampton, though, making the music you made? Did you feel like a bit of an outsider?
Growing up in there, all you know is the environment that you're in. But when I moved up to London, I could, in hindsight, looking back, I could see how the pace of life in Southampton was a really good thing for me because it allowed me time to breathe. You know what I mean? I was just a kid who was making his tunes. And the great thing with the new single is, I got a quote from the second verse. It's so authentic as to what I was doing. When I say, Southampton, I was raised in the days. Remember when we used to pick me up from raves in the days, selling mixtapes instead of getting grades in my barbers, getting a quick fade and a shape. I remember those times when I was like going through the latter part of me. I was in college for a couple of years and I was just like, you know what? I just want to go sell these mixtapes. You know, I might get a nice little crisp shape up and a fade while I'm at it. Do you know what I mean? It was so kind of real to what was going on that I felt that the authenticity of the music I make now is harping back to those days when I was talking about things that were really going on in my life. And I think no one cares for me to be talking about, let me see your hands in the air. Yeah, let's get wasted tonight. No one cares. But when I'm talking from a sincere, authentic place and letting the melodies just be simple and R&B and garage, it feels like Southampton allowed me that.
Right.
Time, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up on Kilimanjaro, Black Cat,
King Tubby,
Addis, man, Lord Gelly, all these guys. I remember going to Carnival when I was maybe 17 years old. It was around the time when Rewind was just breaking. And I'm in the crowd, no one knows who I am. I wasn't even the video. I'm here in the sound system, heavy. Girls going, Craig David all over you, and bare beautiful girls are singing out the name. And I'm in the middle of it thinking, I'm here, but no one's going to believe it. And I never ran over to the mic because I wanted to run over to the mic and just because it got rewound, pardon the pun, like four or five times. I wanted to just own it and I never did. Fast forward 15 years to last Carnival, I went on stage. It was an emotional one for me because I pressed rewind to play and I had Interselect. And I was like, I'm having that moment of that 17-year-old kid again.
Yeah.
I've got goosebumps, we're just talking about it.
I'll be completely honest with you. Dirty secret I've got. I lost my virginity to Rewind.
What? Boop, boop, boop. Gunfinger.
Genuinely.
Listen, weirdly enough,
I think there's a lot of people that can say that as well.
Genuinely.
It's mad to know that the music has, going back to like the effect that it has on people, it's more than just me. Do you know what I mean? That's why a lot, I think artists at the start, you're hungry, you want to show the world what you're capable of. But then it gets to a point when I've seen that I've influenced so many people, been part of people's lives in such a way that you think this is something that you love to do. Just make more music.
Yeah.
I get more excited about looking on my Instagram, seeing people turning up at the weekend to my tunes than anything.
But I'm see like, that all over your socials. You're always bigging up your fans.
It's the smallest thing you can do. If you start to get into that ideology of, oh yeah, I'm too big for that, I ain't got time for that, or oh no, I don't want to take photos anymore. But yet, when they stop taking the photos of you, trust me, you're feeling.
Yeah.
And what is it you're giving up? It shouldn't even be an effort or a chore. What, you took a selfie with someone, now that person's going to like be able to have one of the days where they're telling their friends and they're hyped.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Give yourself. Because when you give yourself, it's weird how the universe gives so much back to you.
Yeah, definitely.
100%.
I love it, man. And I'm in a good place, and the overwhelming love in this country in particular has been something very, very special for me to experience.
Ian Boldsworth on Foobar Radio.
And this is Aaron Craskell, who's joining us.
How you doing, guys?
We're now all on edge now. We weren't aware you were in this tumultuous situation.
Do you want to hold
this
something that looks like a cigarette?
No, I'm good, I'm good. I'm having a beer, yeah?
Do you want to send someone out just go and get you some fags?
Silk cut silver, please.
Could probably smoke in here, couldn't they?
No, you can't smoke in here.
I probably could as a guest. I mean, I wouldn't be as a guest, probably.
I don't think so.
If I sparked up, would you tell me not to?
I would, Aaron, I would.
Would you? All right, I'm trying to get
you.
If Robert De Niro walked in here now and sat down and sparked up a cigar, you would never tell him no.
I would, I'd say. What? No, so
Queen,
he's right.
Walked in here with a Marlboro Light. You would never tell her.
Maybe take a photo of that one.
You'd probably be shocked.
He's right though. If De Niro walked in and said, "I will do an interview now on your radio station, but I'm smoking throughout it," you wouldn't go, "Oh well, well we can't do it then."
How are you even thinking about that?
Well, I don't know, because we're not allowed to, are you? It's all kinds of illegal to be.
So but it's not your building.
No, that's a fair point.
And it's De Niro.
It's De Niro. I'm sure, actually, if I said it is, all right, Robert De Niro wants a smoker, cigar.
But if she did say something, I reckon he'd go, do you know what? Up it out.
No, in this scenario,
really?
Scenario, he's not having it. He's literally saying,
he's like, "Hooter,
it's coming, it's coming," and he's also saying, "And also, I've got something really important to announce." Right, and you're giving it. Well, the problem is, you can't smoke. You can.
I'd have to say, can we take it outside? Can we take the interview outside? I don't know.
Aaron, may I ask how old you are?
I am 35. One of my celebrity friends, he's lied about his age.
Russell Kane.
Yeah, we literally mentioned him just now.
He's
40 in real life. 41, is he?
Is that public knowledge? It is now.
Oh God.
Well, I'm trying. Do you know what? The reason I went quiet then because I was doing sums.
Perfect. Oh no, James is here. My manager's here, and he's just. Oh no.
Are you the same manager? Are you Russell's manager as well?
No.
I know Russell. I always thought that was a really weird decision. Like a really odd decision to make.
He doesn't look his age.
Well, then that's the only bit that matters. If that's important
to you. He looks like 28.
Well, then that's all that matters, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can say I'm whatever age he is. And in comedy, that's...
Yeah.
You know, end up being a bit of a sort of a running joke or a punchline.
Apparently, he didn't do it. It was some woman who done all his Wikipedia or something. She made the mistake and he just went with it. That's what he told me.
That's what happened with your one. So it was a mistake on her Wikipedia and she went with it.
Can I ask you about this story? What are you talking about?
It's Ian's ex-girlfriend.
Oh, way back.
Well, okay, great.
I'm 44 now. I was 19 and she was 18 when we were dating.
Okay, cool.
But her age was incorrect on her Wikipedia, so that if the age was correct, Ian would have been dating her when she was 8 years old.
Savile.
She's about 10 years off on it.
Why has she got a Wikipedia? Is she like...
She's an actor.
Who is she? Is she insane cold? No.
She's been in Coronation Street.
What'd you split up?
None of that is.
Why'd you split up?
Because she was a fucking nightmare. That's why. Because she was a
mate,
fucking.
They all laugh.
She
come
was
on,
an absolute
okay,
fucking
on,
nightmare.
They're the best ones. Sure, they are. They keep you on your toes.
No. There's nightmare and there's nightmare.
Oh, I've been with a few nightmare. I mean, I'd rather go to like Guantanamo Bay, whatever it's called, and date her again.
Oh yeah, Guantanamo Bay.
Guantanamo Bay.
I know that one. Yeah.
Guantanamo.
Has your book been spell checked yet?
Yes.
Okay, fine.
Facebook's biggest joker.
Because I've interviewed a couple of people who would be...
Kian Toomey the other week.
Kian's got a book out.
Internet famous, would that be a word?
Yeah. That's what I don't class myself as anything, as in... I think I'm just popular on an app.
Right,
a few apps.
You've got YouTube, you've got Facebook.
YouTube, Instagram, Snapchat.
Instagram.
Yeah.
Do you feel apologetic for it? Because this is the same with Kian. When I was speaking to Kian, it was like sort of immediately... Because what had happened was, I'd not got the arsehole, but when Nat had said who it was, she'd come into the studio off air... And she said, as a comedian, I was like, I don't know who that is.
Because Ian does stand-up.
Eventually, I don't anymore, really. But
I don't class myself as a comedian. I mean, I've been approached to do stand-up loads of times. And I think I could do a good 20 minutes. But I would be so nervous that it would make it rubbish.
That's what he said.
Exactly what he said,
almost word for word.
Yeah, genuinely.
But I chatted to him about that. And me and Nat have spoken about it in real life, about what the parameters of being a comedian are and what they actually... I argued that it was... You're not a comedian unless you have done comedy, unless you're like yourself on stage.
But I've done comedy sketches.
I sort of think that's maybe a comic actor.
Yeah. For me,
I'm not bothered. You can call yourself what you want. You know what I mean?
I'm an online entertainer. That's what I've written on my passport thing anyway.
Right. Okay.
So
the passport thing.
Honestly, I was like, what do I do for
passport?
Yeah, you got to have a reason. Yeah, you got to have a profession now. And they ask you when you're going in that country, what you're doing here, and I'm like. I don't know what to call myself. I don't know. I just go out of my way to try and get good public reaction and make sketches and
Was it a deliberate thing? Did you target that as a... Was it an ambition thing?
I saw it happen... I don't know, how do I put this? I started doing it on Snapchat. I was on a building site at the time. Started making stupid little safety videos. But my friends and family were saying, these are great, but they're only lasting 24 hours because that's how long the app make a Facebook page. So I started doing characters. It's called The Bad Doctor. I'd go into this room and he was horrible. This doctor was horrible. He'd make you take your boxes off and put them on your head if you've got a sore throat and stuff like
that. She does that. She does that.
Every time he comes in.
I mean, I'm naked right now. I don't know what this is. But.
And did you not question that? When you were in the other room, they said, I want Ian's show.
It looked like there was a casting couch in there.
Yeah, I did say there's like a guest policy. Everyone has to be naked.
I don't want people thinking that it's my... It's her.
It's me.
It's not me. I'm not saying that the guest has to be naked.
I will say, Aaron, you didn't really object too much.
Absolutely not.
Oh, fine, okay then.
That's not...
The groping was quite horrible, but that's fine.
Skinny jeans are off in like 2 seconds.
Absolutely.
That's not how you defend it. You didn't complain.
Where's this going?
So yeah, comedian, I don't class myself as one. I'm in a structure now where I make myself look silly to make people laugh. I don't know if that's comedian or not, but for me, stand-up is frightening because you have to go on that stage and you have to make people laugh. That is your job. And I've been to a few shows where I've felt bad for the people on stage, man, because they are not getting a laugh. And it's what do you do? What do you do when that happens, bro?
Ian, what do you do? What did you do when that happened?
Have you ever died in your ass?
Oh, yeah, totally. Well, everyone has. Every comic
and
has.
What do you do?
I think that most comics, and again, it's a generalisation, and it certainly applies to me, most comics kind of find that amusing in the moment.
Yeah.
I was in a double act, and we used to speak about this thing. This is round about the houses, this. I'll tell you how the conversation went. So it was me and Ed, and we interviewed Lee Mack about it when he did Lee Mack's bits, which was his original sketch that he did in Edinburgh. And he'd said to us that he'd done a solo show in Edinburgh 1 year and hadn't really enjoyed it, and then the following year he did Lee and Mack's bit. So it was Lee, Catherine Tate and Dan Anzapolsky, which then became the sketch show on ITV, but neither of them were in it. Only Lee was in it. And he said that he made a conscious decision that when he went back to Edinburgh he was going with other people on the stage. And this is what really struck me and Ed when we spoke to him about it, was that it's funnier when you're dying on your ass on your own. There's something very overwhelming about
it.
When you're dying on your ass with your mate there,
you can bring it back. Can't you?
Not even bringing it back. You kind of find it amusing.
The Hannah Whitten Show on FUBAR Radio.
Today, I have with me Sammy Paul.
Hello. Woo. I wasn't sure if I was allowed to make noise before I was
introduced. No,
of course. I felt like I was breaking the rules.
No, you can do whatever you want here.
Oh, okay.
More drunk advice questions. Another anonymous. Do you want to read this one out, Sam?
This one's me again. They're all me. I broke up with my ex. I'm very dyslexic, so apologies.
Oh, do you want me to read it?
No, I'm going to attempt it.
Okay.
I broke up with my ex nearly 2 years ago. I haven't been in a relationship since. We'd been together for 2 years, on and off. Mm-hmm. But I still think of him or us nearly daily. Any tips on how to get over him?
Good job, by the way. You read that perfectly.
Yeah, apart from I didn't take it in, so I've just had to read it again. Oh. Actually, like, taking in the meaning.
Well, for the people listening.
The non-dyslexics of all. Getting over someone's, like... There's no easy fix to that, I think. Like, I think time is the biggest thing, and it's cruel because you can't fast forward that process.
I imagine that when you're thinking of him or of your relationship, you're thinking of all of, like, the positive things, and you tend to look back on things of, like... the rose-tinted glasses on. So maybe try and remember the bad stuff too. Balance it out a little bit. Why did you guys break up? If it was on and off, why was it so on and off? To me, that's a red flag of the signs of like a bad relationship. But it's usually those ones that are so on and off that are like the crazy passionate ones. Mm-hmm. So that might be why it's really hard for you to get over them, because it's such a visceral kind of attraction. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and also, after 2 years, you're going to get to know someone really well and you're going to be invested and care about that person. And it means that finding someone else will never instantly live up to that person, because at the end of the day, you're comparing someone who you don't know nearly as well to someone you have such a deep understanding of. And so I find that when I came out of like a 3-year relationship, I found it really hard to like see other people as complexly. And that was really stupid, because it was like, well, only
because it takes 3 years, like, or what, however long, right,
to know that person that well. So I think it's like you've got to remind yourself that people are able to portray the same level of complexity, you just haven't seen it yet. I just think it's like, give other people a chance, and like sometimes it will feel like that's the best you've ever gotten because that's all you know, when actually you need to give yourself time to get to know someone else or something else.
It's been 2 years since you've broken up, so maybe you've already covered these basics of getting over someone, but just in case you haven't, best way to get over someone is to not talk to them, not see them, mute them on all social media, just go cold turkey. Just FYI, that's a good place to start when it comes to getting over someone. Doesn't mean you can't be friends with them in the future,
like that's always a possibility. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I can see that.
Yeah.
Harriet Rose on FUBAR Radio.
Faze is in the building.
Yes, I am.
How are you doing, babe?
I am good, you know. How are you?
I'm really well.
Good, good. That's what I like.
Faze, a.k.a. Richard.
Yes.
A.k.a. Faze.
That's the government name, isn't it?
What would you rather be called?
Faze. My mum calls me Faze. Depends on who's around.
Yeah, but if you're in trouble, does she call you Faze? Does she call you
Faze? No, no, the government name goes, Richard!
Yeah.
My dad's the worst for that still, I can't lie.
Does he say like your full name?
He says it in a way that when he says it, it's like it just strips off every single piece of clothing on your body and you're just naked. Yeah. Like, who said that?
And then you've fallen over as well. Yeah. You tripped over on something. Everything's been pretty mad for you the whole time you've been in the music industry.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely has been. It's been a good run. It's been a good run and I've learned a lot. And
a ride, you could say.
Yeah, and wide, yeah, definitely, man. But it's been a good, a long and wide run, yeah, definitely.
But is it kind of nice sometimes to take a step back and do production, not just... And then when you do come back with a track, you've got that energy to kind of...
Of course, man. Like, people might ask what phase I've been up to for the last few years and stuff. And I started up a production company. We've been working with... Like, we worked with everybody. We've got production credits with everybody. And, it just got to the point after that and I was like, okay, the production company's flying, it's doing what it's doing, it's moving, it's time to focus on Faze. So I closed the doors to outside production for the last 8-9 months and really come up with a body of work that is absolutely insane.
You've been having a bit of me time.
Yeah, a bit of me time, just devising a sound for myself, which is similar to what's out now, but it's my own fusion, it's my own twist on it. Do you know what I mean? I got a lot of time for talented people, so my whole camp right now is just full of creatives and the talented people. Swan Sounds is one of them. He's a 19-year-old producer and writer, so he's the next up as well. Do you know what I mean?
He's a sweet. He came in the studio last week and we had a lovely time.
I saw.
He was really nice.
He is. He's a good guy, man. He's a really nice guy. Good-hearted person, man. I got time for that.
Yeah, I think as well, in terms of like your experience in the music industry, don't you find that people like him, i.e. people who can produce and write their own shit?
You know what it is? It's just like me. So I've got time for talent in general. So if someone's like me and really like... When I mean like me, the guy lives in the studio, I live in the studio, I don't leave the place. I write and produce all my own music. If someone's like that, like, and has that sort of work ethic behind them and really want to take their careers to a certain height and really believe in themselves and have that drive, then I've got time for that, man.
Is it weird having other people come into your bedroom then? When people come work with you in the studio, is it a bit like, what are you doing in my bedroom?
Nah, because I don't work from home, man. I have a studio set up upstairs in my house, but that's just for like personal stuff. If I need to run a line or I need to make an edit or something, I can just do my stuff there.
So you don't have anyone in there?
Nah, but I've got a main place up in London and in Hertfordshire, which I do most of my work from. And if I'm doing outside sessions, they'll come there. So I don't feel like you're in my house, because my dog won't take to you too well.
Oh, really?
I got a big boy.
Oh, what's his name?
A proper dog, King Kainos.
King Kainos, I like the name. Man, it's got power.
He's a beast.
Is he?
Trust me, he needed a name like that to suit him, otherwise. So he couldn't call him Fluffy, mate, I'm telling you.
Does he walk you, or do you walk him?
Listen, if I didn't have it, he's got these like reins, like what you put on a horse. If I didn't have those on him, yeah, he'll be taking me for a walk.
Do you ride him?
My little daughter does, yeah.
I was going to say. Actually, on that note, now you've got a child, how has things changed for you? Because obviously, when you started in the music industry, you didn't have a child, and now you do.
No.
Has that changed your perception of women in the music industry and how kind of that works? Because now you've got a daughter.
It's made me become some paranoid, protective freak, brother. I swear down. It's like, if I had the money right now, I'd buy an island. And I'd move her to that island and say, you're here, living there for good. Yeah, it's changed my outlook in life, as in how I used to be as a person, like where I was just living for myself, just a bit reckless, going out just all night on a mad one and this and that, where it's kind of like this pulled man back down to earth a little bit, kind of like said, okay, it's not just about you, Faze, you got other people right now that are depending on you and stuff like that. And it's kind of just giving me a different drive and a different outlook to life, where it's just about Faze before, in a sense.
Well, I guess as well, in terms of like, because I think when you have a child, I haven't had any children, so I'm just guessing now.
Okay.
But if you're in, like, you've worked with women in the music industry. Obviously, Talisa was in N-Dubs, you know how women can be treated and things like that. So you've known that from day dot.
Yeah.
But now you've got... Do you think you'd be happy if your daughter was like, I'm going to be in a band, I'm going to start making music?
Listen, whatever she chooses to do, whatever she wants to put her energy in and her focus on, I'm going to push. So it doesn't really matter if she wanted to do music or not. Like, if she wanted to do music, I'll push her in it. If she wanted to be a ballet dancer, I'll push her in it. It doesn't matter what it is.
Just going to protect her against everyone.
Yeah, so I'm just like, I'm that guy. I'm just like that diabolical dad. It's just going to be weird and just like embarrass the kids. And when they come around with their boyfriends, I just probably try and make the boyfriend not want to be on her type of thing.
Like, yeah, that sounds like
you don't want to know about her, man. She's a little poo bum over there.
Yeah.
Like, it's embarrassing. Like, Dad, what are you doing that for? Like,
that's definitely the best vibe to go on, though. Just embarrass her, say words like poo and fart, and you should get him out of there.
Yeah, mate. It's like, oh, what? Oh, you actually do that stuff? Like, oh, yeah.
You know, the other day, I wanted to talk about this because you were talking about meditation.
Yeah, okay.
I've recently found, like, I'm not very good at it, and all I do is sit and think about, like, ham sandwiches. But I found, like, in terms of being in the music industry, it really helps to kind of take 5 minutes and sit.
Like, listen, this industry is turmoil. It's absolutely crazy. It's moving so fast, there's so much flipping information to take in at any given moment. Like, when do you actually take a time for yourself and your own peace of mind and your own brain to just slow your thoughts down and actually be able to fathom each individual thought from one another? It's like, it's crazy. So you have to take time.
Stay home and chill, keeping you company during the coronavirus.
Back Row and Chill with Johanna James